This is New Media Beat on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Juliana Vasquez.
And I'm Ava Holtgruen.
Hey, Ava, what do we have for our listeners this week?
Well, Juliana, I'm going to open the show today with our first story. I'm reporting on the plans by some states to pass laws that require social media platforms to have warning labels, just like cigarettes and alcohol. Did you know that social media can be a threat to your mental health?
What's that? Did you ask me a question, Ava? I was doom scrolling on my phone. It's so depressing sometimes.
Juliana, put down that phone. I need you to focus on the show. What is next? What is the next topic after my segment?
After your report on warning labels for social media, we're going to have a TikTok update from Samantha Stock.
Is there going to be a ban? Will ByteDance sell TikTok to an American company? Samantha Stock has all the answers for New Media Beat.
After Samantha's TikTok update, it will be my turn. I have news for creators about YouTube making changes for creators.
What's new at YouTube, Juliana?
YouTube is changing the way it counts video views. The counts are going up, and that could mean more money for YouTubers. The way views are counted means a lot to creators.
Have you heard of Sez, Juliana?
Sez what?
Sez is a new social media app. Avon Obgio will explain what makes Sez different from other platforms. That's right. Avon has something to say about Sez.
Sez who?
Sez Avon Obgio. After Avon says all she has to say about Sez, we will hear from Donovan Johnson about video game exploits. Donovan is on the gaming beat. Why do some players think that using exploits and hacks to win is a problem? Are these hacks cheating or just how you play the game?
New Media Beat reporter Anthony Payamps is planning a career in real estate. I think he may try to sell us a house today.
Wait a minute. This is New Media Beat. We report on new media. What does real estate have to do with new media?
That will be my first question for our New Media Beat real estate agent, Anthony Payamps. He's going to have to connect real estate with New Media Beat. If he can answer that question, then maybe he can sell us a house.
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York at Old Westbury.
We have social media news from my co-host, Ava Holtgruen. Are you ready, Ava?
I'm ready.
There is a big debate about the negative effects of social media. Do we need protection from social media? Does the government need to step up and make social media safe? What does safe mean? Several states are working on legislation to require social media platforms to display warning labels. Are warning labels a solution? Ava, I have a simple question for you. Warning labels about what?
You know how cigarettes and alcohol have warning labels about the harm they can cause? Just like that. But now it would be for social media and the potential mental health harms that they may cause.
What are the concerns about social media and mental health?
So there's actually been a lot of recent concerns over the negative effects that social media can have, especially on children. While research is still being done, there's an increasing amount already showing that excessive social media use can lead to poor sleep, social isolation, and depression in children. Because of these concerns, former United States Surgeon General Vivek Murthy called on Congress last year, asking them to act on these warning labels.
What do legislators want to implement?
So they want to implement the warning label, and every time you would open a social media app, the warning label would pop up, and they want to require that the label must state how social media can cause negative mental health harms. And Minnesota legislators recently, in the past few weeks, have actually already been in the process of passing this bill. They also are requiring the label to provide resources for help like the National Suicide and Mental Health Crises Hotline. Something else they also want to implement is a pop-up timer that will appear every 30 minutes, and it's going to remind the user of how much time they've been spending. So with both, first with the label, it will go away either if you exit the social media app or if you acknowledge the potential harm. And for the warning and for the pop-up timer, again, it'll go away if you acknowledge it, and then it'll come up every 30 minutes.
Who supports this?
After Vivek Murthy first proposed this idea last year, he actually gained a ton of support. 42 state attorney generals wrote and signed a letter to Congress in support of Murthy and his idea. They all agreed that protections need to be put in place for children and their social media usage. Since then, Minnesota, New York, Texas, Alabama, and California have been in the process of passing this warning label bill. It seems as if it is only being tried at the state level, but not the federal level.
Who is against this?
So one company has actually spoken up a lot against this, and that is NetChoice. So NetChoice is a trade association of tech companies that are dedicated to protecting free enterprise and free expression. There, Deputy Director of State and Federal Affairs, Zach Lilly, actually testified against this idea to the Minnesota legislators. Lilly says that the warning label would violate the freedom of speech because it is attempting to regulate social media, which we all know is a platform where users can speak freely. He also brought up how there is no scientific consensus regarding the mental health effects of social media. Yes, social media can have its good effects, but honestly, there's a lot of studies coming out already that shows that it can have its negative side effects. For New Media Beat, I'm Ava Holtgren. Back to you, Juliana.
Thanks, Ava. Let's talk to Samantha Stock about TikTok. We need an update. What happened to the TikTok ban? Is it still coming? Will China allow ByteDance to sell TikTok to an American company? How have Trump's steep tariffs on China made the situation even more complicated? Samantha, didn't the law require ByteDance to sell TikTok by January 19th or face a ban? Why wasn't TikTok banned in January as the law required?
So yes, as we know, the TikTok ban was extended until April 4th of 2025. As many waited around to find out what would potentially happen to TikTok, we found out on that April 4th that the TikTok ban has been extended yet again. An article posted by the BBC on that day states, U.S. President Donald Trump has granted TikTok a second 75-day extension to comply with the law that requires the hugely popular video app to either sell its U.S. operation or face a ban in the country.
Does Donald Trump have any interest in any of these individuals or companies that are in the running?
Donald Trump has shown some interest in a few individuals who are in the running, for the first one being Elon Musk. According to an article from Reuters, when Trump was asked his opinion on Elon Musk potentially buying TikTok, he said, I would be if he wanted to buy it. Trump also said, I have met with owners of TikTok, the big owners. So what I'm thinking about saying to somebody is, buy it and give half to the United States of America. Donald Trump also showed some interest in Oracle, but hasn't said too much on the matter. An article from the NPR states in January that cloud computing company Oracle has been tapped by the White House as a top contender to lead a coalition of other investors to acquire a sizable stake in TikTok's U.S. operation. At this point, he has plenty of time to decide who he wants to sell TikTok to. The second extension definitely worked in his favor and the users of TikTok.
And how might new ownership influence the platform?
New ownership can influence the platform in many ways. First, the new owner can basically make any changes that they want. They can make age restrictions where children are only able to view certain things for their age group. They can do more things for the app just to make it more fun, like adding new features or tools. Lastly, which I think is most important, is to change the user data privacy and security practices. But you never know. Maybe these new owners keep the app the way it is. We can only wait and see for ourselves and hope that the new individual that owns TikTok thinks about the user security and safety first.
And if Donald Trump plans to fully restore TikTok, if Donald Trump plans to fully restore TikTok doesn't succeed, which apps will individuals use instead?
If Trump's plan to fully restore TikTok doesn't succeed, many individuals who are influencers or have jobs dealing with social media will probably be hurt the most. But there are still other apps that people can resort to. Instagram Reels, which is very similar to TikTok, would most likely be where individuals shift if TikTok becomes unavailable. YouTube Shorts is also on the rise, and so is Red Note, which is a Chinese-owned platform that has seen rapid growth now in the U.S. and the U.K. In my opinion, I don't think anyone is too worried about TikTok being banned at this point, but I guess we'll see in another 75 days. For New Media Beat, I'm Samantha Stock. Back to you, Julianne.
Thank you, Samantha. We will be right back to talk about YouTube. YouTube is making changes to their metrics. Why is YouTube changing the way it counts short video views? Why does that matter? What do YouTubers think about these changes?
My co-host Juliana Vasquez is on the YouTube beat this week. One of the most popular features on the platform are the shorts. Short video is big business for YouTubers. Any change in YouTube's policies regarding short video is a big deal for content creators. Juliana, what is a YouTube short and how does it differ from regular YouTube videos?
A YouTube short is basically YouTube's version of a short-form video, something kind of like TikToks or Instagram Reels. They're vertical videos that last up to 60 seconds or less, and they're made for quick viewing. The biggest difference between shorts and regular YouTube videos is really the length and the format. Shorts are meant to be fast, scrollable content that keeps people engaged. Again, a similar algorithm to TikTok.
Why did YouTube decide to make this change to the view count for shorts?
So, according to YouTube, this whole change really came about from creator feedback. People were asking for better insight into how their content was performing. Before this update, YouTube would only count a view on short if someone watched it just for a few seconds. You had to pass kind of a cutoff time before it even registered. However, the issue with that was it didn't fully capture how many people were actually starting the video or tapping in. Now, every time a short starts or replays, it gets counted as a view. That might sound small, but it's actually a very big deal for creators. It gives them a quicker, clearer snapshot of how many people are coming across their content, whether someone stuck around or scrolled past for just 2 seconds. However, the key is that not all views are created equal. A view just means the video started. It's great for measuring reach. But an engaged view, that's when someone sticks around past those first few seconds. That tells the creator that someone was actually interested. And that's the metric YouTube still uses for things like monetization and their partner program. So even if the view count is higher now, what still really matters for creators and advertisers is how many of those are engaged views. And let's not forget that this change also brings YouTube in line with TikTok and Instagram Reels. On those platforms, a view is counted the second the video starts. So now YouTube Shorts is finally speaking the same language. That makes it way easier for creators to compare performance across all platforms and build smarter content strategies. At the end of the day, whether you're posting to YouTube, TikTok, or Instagram, you've now got a more level playing field and better tools to figure out what's really working.
Why is this new view count system important for both creators and brands?
It's honestly big for both sides. From the creator standpoint, it means that they get more accurate numbers when it comes to stuff like reach or how many people are even seeing their videos in the first place. That really helps them shape their content strategy and maybe even grow them faster. And on the flip side, for brands, it makes it easier to compare how a creator's content is performing across all the platforms. So if a brand is running a campaign on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube Shorts, now the view metrics are more in sync.
And how do those other platforms count short-form videos?
So just going back to the engaged view conversation, this new system really puts YouTube Shorts on the same playing field as TikTok and Instagram Reels. All those other platforms, a view is counted every time someone starts or replays a video, no matter how long they watch. It's quick, automatic, and it's been the standard for a short-form video for a while now. So with YouTube adopting that same approach, it is a smart move. It makes the platform way more competitive in the short-form video space. But more importantly, it makes life way easier for creators. Before, if you were posting the same video across these platforms, the numbers didn't always add up. YouTube's older system required a few seconds of watch time to count as a view, while the others didn't. So comparing performance was a little bit tricky. Now, creators can finally get a clearer picture across all the platforms. They can track reach and engagement side by side and figure out what's working. It's not just about one platform anymore. It's about building brands across all of them. So, yeah, this update isn't just about inflating numbers. It's about giving creators consistent data, smarter insights, and a better shot at growing their audience wherever they post. For New Media Beat, I am Juliana Vasquez. Back to you, Ava.
Thanks, Juliana. Yvonne Obgio, who is here to tell us about a new social media app called Sez. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi, Ava. Have you heard about Sez?
Not yet. Can you introduce us to it? What's the first thing you have to say about Sez?
Well, I have a lot to say about Sez today. So Sez is a new social media app that claims to be built around reputation, trust, and user-driven moderation. It was actually co-founded by Joe Trippi, who is a political strategist, and Sez is really said to be like a democratic alternative to Donald Trump's Truth Social.
And what makes Sez so different from other social media platforms?
So Sez doesn't run on algorithms that reward outrage. Instead, it uses a reputation score. The better your behavior and contributions, the more visibility your content is ultimately going to get. If you're toxic or misleading, your reach gets limited. It flips the traditional model on its head.
And how does that reputation score work?
So your score is actually shaped by how you interact with others. Users are encouraged to post valuable content, engage respectfully, and contribute positively to discussions. The more trust you build within the community, the more your voice is amplified. But if you're constantly disruptive or misleading, your score drops and your visibility decreases.
Why do you think users are responding positively to Says so far?
I really do think that people are just exhausted by the constant outrage, misinformation, and trolling on these traditional platforms. Says is really giving them a place to have real conversation and be heard without being drowned out by bots or bad actors. That's really refreshing for a lot of users.
Do you believe reputation-based platforms are the future of social media?
I really do think they could be. As more people seek out spaces where they want to feel seen and heard, platforms like Says are showing that trust and accountability can be powerful drivers of engagement, not just controversy. For New Media Beat, I'm Yvonne Abgio. Back to you, Ava.
Thank you, Yvonne. Do you play video games? Would you like to be a better player? What if someone told you a secret way to beat the game? Would you use a hack to get ahead? Is that cheating? Let's find out.
Donovan Johnson has some explaining to do. He's here to explain the conflict over players using exploits to hack their way to victory in video games. Donovan, start with the basics. What do you mean by an exploit or a hack in a video game?
So, exploits aim to combat the basics of a video game and seek outcomes that were never intended by game developers. These bugs and glitches, they range from small to large extents. Players deliberately abuse mechanics in the game's software, and it is deemed unfair when it comes to other players being affected by it.
And why do people implement hacks in video games?
Well, to be honest, most people stoop to such a low level in video games because they're not skilled enough to experience the usual difficulties that come with playing against people online. Various video game genres such as action, first-person shooter, racing, fighting, and a bunch of others have fallen victim to players cheating the system. The way it's done is by coding said game and remapping certain controls through a third-party server, ultimately having a massive advantage over the other players.
Is there a specific game that has a big cheating problem?
The very popular game by the name of Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege is a 5v5 first-person tactical shooter that involves map knowledge, strategic combat, and proper planning. The game was released in 2015, and as time went on, the community was crawling with hackers and exploiters. There was an extremely popular cheat called Aimbot. It is essentially a way to lock onto a player so that it is easier to track their body. Considering the game is designed to show that you have genuinely good aim, it's not hard to decipher. Players on all platforms, whether it is PlayStation, Xbox, or PC, have constantly been complaining on social media and demanding the company Ubisoft to quote-unquote fix your game. Though the developers are still working on anti-cheat systems, there are still players to this day finding loopholes to make the game a not-so-fun experience.
And are there times when it is okay to use cheats, exploits, or hacks?
Actually, there is. I would say single-player games are usually the best games to use hacks. The reason is because no one is exactly bothered by them, being that they're in private settings. Prime example, LEGO video games. There are codes that you can figure out as you're progressing in the game, and you can turn the settings on and off once you have them in your arsenal. For New Media Beat, I am Donovan Johnson. Back to you, Julian.
Thank you, Donovan. We have a different topic to close the show today on New Media Beat. Anthony Payamps is our New Media Beat real estate reporter.
Real estate? I thought we were a new media news show. What's real estate got to do with the media?
That's a good question, Ava. Let's ask Anthony to clear this up. Why should we be talking about real estate on New Media Beat? Anthony, are the new media important in the real estate business? Are real estate agents using a lot of these apps?
Most definitely. New media is extremely important in real estate because it enhances marketing reach, allows for virtual tours, and helps agents connect with buyers through many different platforms like Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, etc. And it's definitely working because every time I'm scrolling through any apps, I see realtors giving house tours or real estate agents trying to get people to join their Discords for tips and tricks on starting off and succeeding in the real estate business.
And what is Spinify and how does it help motivate real estate agents and promote team performance?
Spinify generates leaderboards that displays rankings for stats like calls made, listings obtained, open houses conducted, and deals closed. This is a good thing because it promotes healthy competition and encourages agents to stay driven and productive.
And how do these agents use DocuSign? What are the two advantages and two drawbacks of using DocuSign in real estate transactions?
One advantage is that it allows clients to sign documents from any device, which is extremely convenient for remote or busy clients. Another advantage is that it integrates well with CRMs like AgentBox, which automates workflows and minimizes the paperwork. As for the drawbacks, some older clients might find the platform unfamiliar and difficult to use, and the subscription fees can be rather expensive for smaller agencies.
And tell us about Zillow Premier Agent. In what ways does Zillow Premier Agent help real estate agents close more deals?
Zillow Premier Agent helps real estate agents by matching them with high-intent buyers through live calls. It also offers CRM integration, behavior insights, and team management tools, all of which improve agent response times, builds trust, and leads to more completed transactions. For New Media B, I'm Anthony Pamps. Back to you, Julian.
Thank you, Anthony.
That's all for this week.
Thanks for listening to New Media Beat. New Media Beat is co-produced by Jaden Nunez, Henry Wilson, and John DeLiso. Our engineer is Jaden Nunez. Our co-host is Ava Holdgruen. Thanks, Ava.
Thanks, Juliana. Today we heard reports from me, Ava Holdgruen, Donovan Johnson, Yvonne Obdio, Anthony Piams, Samantha Stock, and Juliana Vasquez.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our newscasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.